Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Has been top 30. So that team was number one. So you're getting back to some real stinginess that had been a trademark of Penny's teams. But with those rosters of late, especially last year after you lose Mills, you hadn't been able to do. This team's creeping up to one of the better defending teams. And that's why, again, even if a Tulane makes a run or a push early, these teams in the AAC are not going to be able to run off on you. If you can, you know, play defense the way you did last night on a regular basis the rest of the way, you're going to run this league.
Jason, I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Take care, my brother.
That is Jason Smith of the Jason and John Show. Coming up at 11 o'clock. When we come back, let's talk with Chris Harrington. We'll do that next right here on the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Each and every day here on the Jeff Calkins Show, Chris Harrington joins the program. Let's fire it up. Chris Harrington joins us from the road. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is Fourth Time Around by Bob Dylan. Been a lot of Bob Dylan lately, from Blonde on Blonde. Lyrics don't have much meaning for us today, but the title, Fourth Time Around, for the Grizzlies, Fourth Time Around with the Houston Rockets last night.
I want to get to your column in just a minute, but I was just kind of, after the game, thinking, like, how did they win that game? Because, you know what I mean? Like, I know Jaren's obviously huge, but, like, it just, at the end, I was like, I don't know how they won.
So I was not, as you alluded to, writing about the game. I was writing about Ja, and that decision was made before the game. And given the 8:30 tip, I was trying to write during the game.
Yeah.
And so I was not as tuned in as I would like to have been, given a game that good. But at one point, I jotted down in my notes, this is maybe when they're down 10 or whatever in the first half, about, you know, they were sort of struggling against a team that was, a team that was bigger, more athletic, and more tenacious. And at some point in the middle of the second half, I deleted the word tenacious because the Grizzlies matched that. But I do think it's still, even winning that game, we don't feel like it's a good matchup because there is a difference in the physicality and athleticism of the players. And I think that's a real problem for the Grizzlies. And they just scrapped their way to a win. I do think with Houston, I'm friendly with one of the people covering the Rockets, and their read on their own team is they're not reliable down the stretch. They've been winning a lot of close games, but part of that is that they've been getting into close games when they've had leads.
Yeah.
You've seen that against
the Grizzlies.
Holding
on.
That's been happening against other teams too. So they're concerned about their ability to hold leads and to execute in the fourth quarter. And maybe that was part of it from their end. But the Grizzlies just dug in and just had a really tenacious, I think, second half. And Desmond Bane had, you know, maybe his biggest, in terms of minutes and workload, that's basically the point guard, maybe his biggest game of the season in that respect. Luke Kennard, I think Brandon Clark was great, and Jaren, man. It was great to see Jaren on a night that was supposed to be his night, make it his night on the floor in the game, and to really polish off that game. So I thought that was great.
Yeah, I'm with you, because Jeff asked me, do I feel any better about the matchup? And I'm like you. I don't really feel any better. The only positive I took from it is I do think sometimes psychologically you need to just get a W. And just to know that you can do it, because then I just think some stuff starts to compound, and like to me, like that was the best thing that happened. But in terms of how I think they match up, I don't feel any better today.
Yeah, I do think that matchup could look a little different if the Grizzlies had Marcus Smart and or Vince Williams along with the rest of their team. But we've been waiting for that all season, so we'll see.
Yeah. And then you've got a fantastic column. It's up over at the Daily Memphian. If you're not subscribed, go ahead and subscribe because it's worth just reading that column. And Jason and I were just talking, and the Grizzlies can downplay Ja all they want. Like, that's their right. They can do that. But the point that Jason made, and I thought he was spot on, was Ja was trying to be seen last night. And I don't know. How would you describe what you watched last night?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether he was trying to be seen or he just wasn't self-aware of the way it was coming across. I don't know about that. I'll say that, as I sort of said a minute ago, like the decision, I made the decision to write the Ja column before the game started, right?
Right.
So it wasn't a reaction to that. That ended up being a component of what I wrote about. This week has been a moment with Morant. And it was a moment even before he was a scratch from the game. It was a moment coming out of, we've been talking about it on the radio all week. It was a moment coming out of that Knicks game where he had such a bad game in so many ways. And then him to leave, then him, you know, sort of not talking to the media since then, you know, not at practice. He had multiple opportunities. They had a practice. They had a shoot around. None of that. And then suddenly, like, out of the blue, like, he's on the injured list. And then even that was sort of weird because it was first he was listed as playing and then questionable and then doubtful. And then even, like, an hour and 45 minutes before the game, Taylor Jenkins didn't rule him out. He said, "I anticipate he won't play," and made it sound it was still up in the air. It made it sound like that's sort of up to Ja, right? Then it was only half an hour before the game that he was a scratch. And, you know, the absences are really piling up at this point, but it's more than the absences. Ja's missed more than 40% of the games this season, but in the games he has played, you know, he hasn't always been the best version of himself, right? Everyone's noticed this. And it's an unavoidable concern because the Grizzlies are half a game out of second in the West, but for them to be the best version of themselves, for them to be a team that can make a deep playoff run, you have to have a healthy and effective and engaged Ja Morant. You have to have it not for one game or two games. You have to have it for two, three, four, maybe more weeks in a row. And there's a real question. There has to be a question about the degree of confidence the Grizzlies can have in that right now and what that says about the team's ceiling this season. So I think it's a really big topic and an unavoidable one that came to a little bit of a head last night.
What is their explanation of what's going on with the injury?
Well, it's listed as right shoulder soreness. Obviously, there's history with his shoulder. This is the same shoulder that he had the torn labrum and the surgery on last season. It's the same shoulder. He had a different injury, but same shoulder about a month ago with the AC joint sprain. He missed five games. You know, what Taylor Jenkins said was in shoot around earlier in the day, he had taken a bump. Or maybe it was practice the day before. He had taken a bump, and then when he woke up the next morning, he sort of felt soreness in it, and that's when it sort of became an issue. I have no reason to doubt that. But I asked Taylor Jenkins before the game to elaborate. I asked him whether Ja had been sort of managing discomfort in the shoulder since the injury a month ago. Because I think some people have watched games and seen him favorite it or rub it, and you make that assumption. And to me, that would not be at all surprising if that were the case. Taylor Jenkins, you know, said that was not the case, that it has not been something that the team has needed to be attentive to. It was just that he happened to hit it in just the right way in practice the day before, and it became an issue. And they characterized it as a day-to-day situation with the shoulder.
Because it's interesting that, you know, the way he's playing right now, because, you know, I completely agree with you. The numbers bear it out. But the thing that I thought was a little bit more striking is when he came back from the injury that he had in the preseason, was it ankle? Didn't he stepped on the basketball or something? I can't remember if it was ankle or knee.
I passed him in the foot. Yes.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
When he first came back, like for the most part, I thought he was playing some of his best basketball. It felt like everything was in control. I know the numbers weren't eye-popping, but I just felt like he was in complete command of what they were trying to do offensively. And then he gets the hip injury, and I feel like maybe it's since the hip that I don't feel like we've refound that form. Am I off base in that? Am I misremembering?
No. I think early in the season, Ja was playing some of his best basketball, and it was a little bit different. It wasn't like the big scoring nights. Like, I looked this up the other day. Like, the Grizzlies haven't had anyone score 40 in a game this season.
Yeah.
But the top seven scoring nights in the season are all Jaren. And Ja's high in the season's 32, right? So he hasn't had the big eruption scoring nights. But I think for a lot of this season, in terms of, you know, balancing scoring and playmaking and better defense, he's not only has he been good, and I've made this point before, and this was very true before the Knicks game, and it's even true after the Knicks game. The Grizzlies' team performance in Morant's minutes has actually been the best it's ever been, even though there's a sense that he hasn't always been his best. Like, the team has played really well when he's on the floor. But I agree with you that it's sort of taking a little bit of a downturn of late. I think that hip injury is a good sort of data point to cite. I mean, people have noted that he hasn't played more than five games in a row this season. He hasn't even played five games in a row since early December.
Yeah.
And so I think the frequency of the absences has been an issue. I suspect, and this is sort of the problem, we're in the realm of suspicion about trying to guess like how he feels or what's really impacting things. I mean, one of my suspicions is that the accumulation of injuries is taking a toll, not only physically, but sort of on the spirit, right? He is disappointed that he is missing games so frequently.
No, I kind of like most of the theories out there, other than like he's sticking it to Adam Silver. Like, I can kind of buy.
Yeah, I didn't even indulge that one.
Yeah, like, right? But most of the other stuff, like, hey, frustration with the injuries. We've seen athletes get frustrated that when your body doesn't do what you think it can do or what you're used to it being doing. Like, I can totally buy that. I can, you know. I think it's entirely possible. Like, hey, I didn't make the All-Star game. Like, I have been in the All-Star game. Like, even though I don't know if there was like a reasonable expectation that he was going to be one, but I can see where that had some impact. I don't know. I just kind of look at it like this. Do I think Marcus Smart is like super happy right now? No.
Right.
But publicly, like, you wouldn't really know. You know what I mean? Other than he's not playing, but like, he's not making a scene out of it. Like, that to me, that's the key difference. Like, I think he has a right to be upset, but at the same time, it's like, if you're going to present yourself like he did last night, well, people are going to, like, it's a natural reaction because everybody saw it.
An expressive and a temperamental player.
Yeah.
In positive and negative ways. He's not alone in that. There's a guy named Marc Gasol who was an expressive. You can sort of move or a bad move, right? That's a guy who's one of the most beloved players in franchise history, as I think is Ja Morant already. So, you know, players are different. People are different, and players are people. But I do think Ja Morant is someone who his emotional, and I don't want to get into like psychological stuff so much, but it's just true. His emotions feed into his play.
Yeah.
That's true with everybody, but I think it's more true of Ja than most players. And he doesn't really hide, you know, his emotions, which I think honestly is fine. I'm not calling for someone to hide their emotions, but I just think it is part of the package with him.
Jaren makes the All-Star game last night. I think the way that I kind of looked at it was, I can't remember if you tweeted it or, you know, it was one of those nights where my wife got back in town, so I'm only like casually like paying attention to Twitter. But I believe now the stat is Jaren joins Mark, Zebo, and Ja as the only like multiple time All Stars as a Grizzly.
Yeah.
And my kind of number one thought was like, oh, that's fitting. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and I felt like he's been so good this year. I am happy that he's getting recognized.
Yeah, Powell made one as a Grizzly and then made multiple after he left the Grizzlies. Conley's one All-Star was after leaving the Grizzlies. And so the Grizzlies All-Star meter, you got those four guys with two and Powell with one. And now, you know, next up for Jaren to try to join Ja and Mark and Zebo. It's the only Grizzlies to make All-NBA.
Yeah.
But like he's really entered that upper tier of players in franchise history already, and he's 25 years old.
And I mean, he was awesome last night. Like that was kind of the other thing. It's like I know he had the foul trouble, whatnot, but it's like what was striking to me is when it got crunch time, when they couldn't get any stops, all of a sudden Jaren comes back on the floor, they're getting stops, and then it was just like clear out for the big fella, let him go to work.
It's really something because it's just layers of it, right? It's good on both ends of the floor.
Yeah.
It's good every game. It's good in crunch time. It's, you know, the consistency of what he's done this season in all kinds of ways is really something. It's a crazy impressive season he's had.
Well, and then honestly for me, it's like, you know, when we always think about this three guys, maybe it's because of how it started, but like in the back of your mind, there's like, oh, he's kind of had some injury problems. He's injury prone. To me, one of the bigger stories is I got to imagine his body doesn't feel great night after night after night. But he's playing, I think he's played every game but two.
And those two are the first two. Because he had a hamstring thing in training camp. And he basically missed all the training camp. So he has played, I think that was game 48, I think, for them last night. 48 or 49. So he's played like 46 straight games.
Yes, 48. He's played 46 straight games. Yes, you're correct. Yeah.
So he's played 46 consecutive games as the team's leading scorer and best defender on a team that's half a game out of second in the West. And this is why, to me, he should have been an all-star starter, to me. I think, you know, it's this difference with glancing at game averages versus looking closely at impact on winning and losing and what players are really doing. And so much of what Jaren does defensively is, like, it's not about the blocks and steals. And it really has never has been. It's the totality of what he does defensively. And then you look at his role in the team at offense and the role in the context of team success. Like, you know, he's arguably been a top 10 player in the league this season, much less a top 12 player in the West.
I was also thinking about this, and I know you said you're going to write about it at a later time, but I just kind of wanted to pick your brain. Is it better for the Grizzlies if Jaren makes, you know, one of the all-NBA teams? Because it seems like at this point, Defensive Player of the Year is not going to happen. We can argue whether or not that should or shouldn't. I'm just kind of dealing in reality. It almost feels like to me, if he's going to make one of the all-NBA teams, that is the best-case scenario for the Grizzlies because they can just be done with it. How do you view it?
That is the conventional wisdom. I'm going to wait to write about it because sometimes I figure out what I think through the writing process.
Sure.
I'll only say my only pushback of that is I don't think getting Jaren wrapped up before he gets to unrestricted free agency is at all an existential proposition for the Grizzlies. Under any circumstance, no matter what path it goes, at the end of every single path, the Grizzlies will be allowed to offer more money than any other team. And I think at the end of every path, they will be willing to do so. And I think if the Grizzlies are offering Jaren more money than anyone else for a team from an organization that treats him well on a team that's set up to win, I'm not that worried about it.
I guess kind of the way I was looking at it is you see it much more in the NFL, but I always feel like the longer you wait, the more you wind up paying. And I would just be in the mode of like, let's just get it done, and then, like, you know, you kind of want to reward him, but like then that, to me, it's like the longer it goes on, the more opportunities for kind of weirdness because everything eventually just becomes a negotiation.
Yeah, there's two things there. There's the how much you pay, and then there's the risk, right?
Sure.
Of not signing someone.
Yep.
It may be true that the longer you wait, the more risk is entailed. It's not true that the longer you wait, the more you end up paying because if he ends up going all the way to unrestricted free agency, that'll mean he did not qualify for Supermax. Probably.
Sure.
You literally can't pay as much. So that is not necessarily going to be true, and that's where the complication arises. But I think my attitude about this from the jump has been, like, let's get past All-Star and trade deadline, and then we can worry about All-NBA. That's why I've been waiting to get into it, because I just don't think it's a pressing issue right now. And also, I do not think my belief is that it is not an existential issue for the Grizzlies. There have been some circumstances around in other places in the league where people have said, you know, this guy needs to get Supermax so the team can keep him. Otherwise, the team's going to lose him. And I don't think that's reality with Jaren Jackson Jr.
All right, the other thing I wanted to pick your brain on. Listen, I have no idea what deals would or wouldn't be out there. We just know that Luke Kennard was included in a potential deal that did not execute. I said it on Twitter. Maybe it's because I had graduation goggles on last night and Luke was hitting shots. How risky is it for the Grizzlies on a team that doesn't have, you know, exceptional shooting to potentially give up, like, the one known, I guess you could throw Desmond in there, but, like, Luke is a known exceptional shooter. Like, I just kind of struggle with they should just let it go. I guess that's kind of where I'm coming at.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote a column about Luke about a week ago. People can check it out if they haven't seen it. And it was about how – it was sort of a battle of all these issues. And partly about how he's really solidified himself as a key part of the rotation in the last month. There was a point in the season where they had moved him out of the rotation. It was brief, but they did it. It was, you know, and it sounded like he was on the outs. He has worked his way back in.
And honestly, the only way he really started – the only reason he really worked his way back in at first was – injuries.
Yeah. Well, and still, I mean, starting games when John misses games, which has happened a lot, as we've noted, but they are starting Luke. They're not starting Scottie Pippen. They could do other things.
Yeah.
Obviously, Marcus Smart is not there, but they have really liked this Desmond Bain, Luke Kennard backcourt when Ja is off the floor. I think that's really a test drive of how they may handle, you know, some playoff minutes when Ja is off the floor. I think Kennard has really energized and become more of an all-around offensive player and less of just a pure shooting specialist. Luke last night, he had 6 2-point field goals.
Yeah.
Like, I bet he has not had many games in his career where he's had 6 inside-the-arc field goals. He's really playing well. Do I think that means he won't be traded? No, not necessarily. But I think the Grizzlies should look at him a little bit differently than maybe they did a month ago. In the sense of, this is not just an expiring contract to shop around. This is a key part of your rotation that you would contemplate the loss of if he is concluded in a deal, right?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned. I was trying to see if I could. I was going through his game logs. The last time that he just had, like, I'm with you because it felt like that was the most 2-pointers, like just like, you know, 15 footers he had taken.
Right. No, I would be willing to bet that was the most 2-point field goal attempts he's had in a game as a member of the Memphis Grizzlies. I would wager that is true. I have not looked it up.
Chris, safe travels. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
That is Chris Harrington. Again, he's got an outstanding column up over at the Daily Memphian. I highly recommend that you go and read it. Extremely well-written, well-done column. Make sure you go check that out. When we come back, Jeffrey joins the program. Let's welcome him back from the road when we come back. Right here on the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
This would be a great weekend. It's Friday. This would be a great weekend to get into Oak Hall, where the semi-annual sale is. Listen, it's been going along, and it's now 50% to 70% off men's and women's merchandise, fall and winter clothes throughout the store. I was talking to someone recently who actually spent a few years working at Oak Hall, and she says, "Yeah, they're still like family," which is how you feel when you walk into Oak Hall. Clothes are beautiful. The people are incredibly helpful, and the savings are better than ever on sale fall and winter merchandise right now. This would be a great weekend to get in to Oak Hall. Listen, we talk all about Valentine's Day and jewelry and everything else. If my Valentine wants to get me something from Oak Hall, that would be absolutely spectacular. Nothing better than having a sport coat, quarter zip, whatever, from good folks at Oak Hall. So, Jeffrey, I was listening as I was driving along. A couple things. One is, in terms of the matchup with the Rockets, I didn't ask you if you feel any better about it. I asked you if you feel any different about it. Because I wasn't coming at it from, I feel bad about it, and I still feel bad about it. I guess what my point is the victory didn't make me feel, the fact that they happened to win this one didn't make me feel any different, better, worse, whatever else. The fact that, mm-hmm. that they happened to win this one. I do think they're a handful. I don't know. Here's the truth. Almost anyone you match up with in the West at this point would make me nervous for different reasons. You know,
there's one that wouldn't.
Okay. Okay, well, all right. Oklahoma City would make me feel nervous.
Sure.
Denver would make me feel nervous.
Yep.
Let's see. Houston would make me feel nervous.
Obviously.
The Lakers would make me feel nervous because
yep.
Anthony Davis, right? They'd make me feel nervous.
Well, and you have to beat the refs, too.
And you have to beat the refs, too. Plus, the downside of losing to the Lakers mm-hmm. again would just be, you know, hideous. I guess Minnesota doesn't make
that's
sense,
the
what
one.
You're pointing at. Dallas would make me feel nervous.
Absolutely.
And honestly, I don't assume they would beat Minnesota. They would be favored, and I would feel pretty good about that. Like, however things fall. Honestly, I don't even say I don't know that Golden State's going to make the playoffs. They wouldn't particularly make me feel nervous. I don't think.
I mean, I guess with the caveat of like, are they going to make a big move? You know, I don't. But
right,
as currently constructed, I completely agree with
that. But it is sort of like, A, we don't know who the Grizzlies are going to be. We don't know if Ja's going to be healthy. We don't know all of that stuff. And then B, like, there's just littered throughout the West, there's, you know, really tough matchups. And it's impossible to predict how it will fall out. The other interesting thing was I also was listening to y'all talk about Ja. So two questions about that. One, Jason's view was he meant to be seen that way. It was intentional for him to be seen as morose as he was last night. That was a show that he was intentionally staging. Chris didn't want to get into it in a way because, you know, he was like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he wanted to be seen like that or if he was just unaware, you know, or unself-conscious. Not particularly self-aware in terms of how things would be construed, et cetera. You come down more on the former than the latter?
Oh, a 1,000%. Does Ja come across as someone that doesn't, that's not aware?
What was he trying to say?
I mean, I think it's just as simple as, like, sometimes we all have people in our lives that, like, when they're feeling bad, they want you to know that they're feeling bad so that you'll be like, you know, like, there's, I don't know if they're trying to get sympathy or whatnot, but, like, that happens.
I did think that Chris's point about Marc Gasol was
100%.
A really good one.
Like, Big Fella, we knew when Big Fella was not happy.
Like I guess people did accuse him of being pouty or melodramatic or whatever else.
Moody Mark, remember?
Maybe that's the right comparison here. Like there are some players who go to work and every day is the same and they show up and you don't know exactly how they're feeling and things might be going on in their lives and they might be feeling better or worse about themselves or about their roles or about whatever else and you just don't know. And then
Mike
there are
Conley.
Other players.
No idea. You know what I mean? Mike Conley had the same attitude every single day.
And then there are other players who are dramatic. And that is true in the NFL as well. It's true in every sport. It's true in tennis. It's true in every sport. There's
Djokovic.
And in some
there's
ways,
Djokovic and then there's Federer.
And, well, hell, let's go back. There's McEnroe and Borg. You know,
absolutely.
Now there you're not holding whole teams, you know, not hostage. It's a little strong. But, like, there it is, to the extent that you're
playing for yourself.
Your histrionics are just affect nobody other than you.
You're playing
right?
for yourself.
So,
it's an individual sport.
Yeah. So, it's just like I don't know. Like, I thought Chris's point was that people are wired how they're wired, and it may be no different than, you know, if you're having a fight with your partner or a friend or whatever, you just kind of slam the stuff around. Like, you want to be noticed that you're moody and you're unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What are you trying to say? Nothing except for, I hope you notice that I'm unhappy because I'm slamming this coffee cup down or I'm doing, you know, whatever.
The door,
yeah.
So who knows? It is definitely true that you know, we all noticed. And I guess that gets to my other question here is, that was a magnificent win last night. To the extent that night will be remembered, it may not be remembered particularly for anything other than 2 years or a year and a half. Say, I remember that game against Houston was fun. Will it be remembered as the night that you beat Houston and got, you know, got that monkey off your back and whatever? Or will it be remembered as the night that Ja revealed some deep, dark unhappiness that's going to come back to overwhelm us? Or neither?
I think it depends. Like,
it's sort of asking for a prediction.
Right, so, like, if you tell me, question. Like, the Grizzlies and Rockets meet up in a second-round matchup and the Grizzlies win, like, a hard-fought series, well, maybe you can turn and point to this game where, hey, this was a team that was kind of a thorn in their side, but they finally got over the hump, and you can point to that. I think it could be remembered that way. If we find out that, like, Ja has lingering injury concerns or that, you know, that there's, you know, something deeper going on than just he didn't feel good last night, well, it could definitely be remembered as that. You know, I think it just kind of depends.
I'll be honest, and I do think it's something. I don't know what if it could be. Let's be honest, they cover for Ja. They have lock time. You know what I mean? Like, so the fact that they said, oh, no, he's fine, you know, basically, that's the essence of it. Chris asked him if they'd been managing the shoulder and whatever else. They brushed off any concerns about Ja last night, but it was weird. And it was weird, not just the way he supported himself, it was weird the way the whole thing unfolded, right? It was
this is simply weird. That game was like an electric factory. And it's like the only person
that's
in the arena
I'm talking about
that was
morose.
Yeah.
No, that was weird. But my point is, it was also even before the game began.
Totally agree.
The way that it was all, and of course it's coming. So whatever, we overanalyze everything. We care about the franchise, and people ultimately want him to be content, happy, and effective. So there you go. A couple other things I did want to get into. Sam Hardiman over at the Daily Memphian has an interesting story. That this week the Grizzlies have been giving one city council member and one member of the county commission tours, so two by two, much like NOAA.
Yes, of course.
Really. Two by two, they have been giving tours of FedEx Forum and the work that is about to commence. They do it this way because then you don't have to have media at the, you know, there's not the sunshine laws to apply. Uh-huh. If you have small, speaking of covering, so if you have small groups traipsing through there, you don't have to, like, you don't have to be, you know, comporting with sunshine laws. There's nothing nefarious going on here. It's actually encouraging because all that they're doing is they're preparing to start spending some of the public money that has been collected on their behalf or pointed their direction. This just largely for work bringing the arena sort of up to date in ways that, I'll be honest, should have happened all along. Like, when you look ultimately at whatever this renovation package will be, a substantial amount of money is going to go for you know, just sort of maintenance and upgrades that should have happened, you know, year by year. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. So that's the sort of work that's going to start, but it does evidently require a thumbs up from the city council. And so they've been doing that. And of course, and the good news here is that all of this is going along and consistent with the assumption that they will ultimately get something worked out on a long-term lease. You know, they're just quietly, and they have been quietly from the beginning because these have been working on this, you know, this enterprise of figuring out what the future looks like. And they have always been, and I give this, you know, immense credit to that franchise, they have been, you know, they've never threatened, they've never done any of that. They've never really even talked publicly about this much, for out of concern, at least in part, that these things will be seen as threats. And it was sort of striking to me. Like, it was a wild, raucous, great atmosphere last night, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Great. Broadcast even noted it.
Yeah, multiple times. Yeah. So that was great.
Championship effort from the people.
Won the sellout.
Yeah.
Attended 16,000. So 16,000 and change. I didn't see that, but I noticed that the first two numbers were 16,000 for a massive game. So the fact that Robert Pera is as rich as he is and as committed as he is a good thing for the city of Memphis. The fact that they're continuing to have these tours, basically anticipating the work to be done, also a positive thing for the city of Memphis. So there you go on that. The other thing I want to talk about, Jeffrey, we have several other things we can discuss, but one of the things that will happen this weekend is John Calipari will return to Rupp Arena. There was an interesting video put out yesterday by Rick Pitino, who also once upon a time returned to Rupp Arena coaching another team. Now, that team was Louisville.
Yeah, in-state rival.
Yeah, the in-state rival. Now, he didn't go directly from Kentucky
Correct.
To Louisville. You know, this was more of a
But when he took it, when he took another college job, he did take the Louisville job.
He did take the Louisville job. But this is more like Saban going from LSU
to the Dolphins. Yeah.
And then back to Alabama.
Right.
But it didn't go well for Rick Pitino when he went back to Rupp, and this was the message that he posted yesterday on social media.
Hello, Big Blue Nation. I didn't steer you wrong with Mark Pope when I sent out that last video, and I certainly won't steer you wrong with this video. Toughest day of my coaching career at Louisville was when I had to walk into Rupp Arena. Tried not to show it, but when I went home, the reception, it tore me up apart because I love that place so much. And it's interesting because I was speaking to Ed Cooley just recently about Providence, and he said he almost was brought to tears because of the bad feelings he got going back there. But this is different. And as you all know, I'm not best friends with John Calipari. I respect him, certainly. But it was a mutual thing. The fans wanted a change. John read the tea leaves. He needed a change. And he really didn't want to leave. But what did he do for you? He brought the best talent in the history of the game of any university in America to Lexington. He also won a national championship. He also was, his style of play was extremely entertaining. So he's coming back on Saturday. And I want all of you to show the great class that you have. 23,000 plus people giving him a huge standing ovation. Show him what respect and admiration's all about. I know you have the class. I've always believed in you. Do it once again.
All right, a couple things I enjoyed about that video. The one is, I like the, as you all know, I'm not best friends with John Calipari. I like that.
That was laugh out loud funny.
What?
That was laugh out loud funny.
Yeah, that was just great. Yeah. I also liked that when he was discussing what John did at Kentucky, he said, brought the best talent that has ever been at any program, which is, let's look at UCLA once upon a time, et cetera. But he said, that's what he said to Kentucky, which is an interesting thing to be credited for. Then he said he also won a national championship, but it is sort of interesting. Just one national championship. And he, you know, brought all that talent. Like he brought talent. There's sort of a half full, half empty quality to that sentence in there. But I think fascinating that he's doing this. Do you believe it will produce a standing ovation of 23,000 cheering for John Calipari when he goes back to Rupp?
I do not. In fact, it's part of why I actually love this video. You know the best way to get people to do something that you don't want them to do?
You think he wants him to get booed as badly as he did?
I don't think you. I don't think he would
classy.
Be disappointed. Correct.
He can look classy,
Correct.
Even though he knows what's going to happen.
Exactly.
And so this is a way of just getting some, digging it in.
By the way, all that talent, Of course, he won a national championship. You know, won.
Yes. Oh, that and he also won a national championship.
Uh-huh.
So you think he will be booed?
Oh, mercilessly.
Should he be booed?
I just, you know what I mean? Like, in the end, fans were frustrated. Like, in the end, like, he left. Like, he
but
leaves.
But it's the circumstances under which he left Kentucky.
I know, but I'm saying is, though,
he left Memphis. Memphis fans would boo him because they wanted him to stay.
Correct.
Right? They were hurt, and they wanted him to stay. Kentucky fans wanted him to leave.
I still
think they'll boo him. They'll boo him because they were sick of him at the end.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Yes. And now it's even easier to express that because he's coach of a rival team. Anyway, all right. What's coming up next on the show, on the station, Jeffrey?
Jason and John coming up next. Anthony Sane will be with them today. DeMichael Cole going to join me today on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Blake Topmeyer will be with us. Cobb will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
All right. Have a great weekend, everyone. We will be back Monday. For now, our work is done.